Broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use, no doubt, continues now. This is the broadcast for December the 18th in the year of our Lord, 2020. This is hour two of two, and our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio and the traditions of our founding fathers. Without further ado, our special guest today, Jonathan Alexandra. He is senior counsel for government affairs at Liberty Counsel Action. Liberty Counsel, Liberty Counsel Action, lcaction.org. Jonathan, welcome back to Liberty Roundtable Live, sir. It's been a while.
It has been, and a lot has happened, but thanks so much for having me.
All right, so this vote fraud discussion is so mammoth, we'll never have time to get to it all. But what I'm hoping you can do is give me a 30-second kind of sketch on, one, your involvement in this. Liberty Counsel has been involved even back in the 2000 Chad days of the George Bush-Al Gore deal, so they have a lot of experience. It's not your first rodeo. Let's start there and then the start of how you backed into this and what you've been doing, sir. Is that all right?
Yeah, absolutely. So about 20 years ago, of course, the Bush and Gore election that made its way all the way to the Supreme Court saw my boss, Matt Staver, as one of the primary litigators, along with a lot of notable names. Brett Kavanaugh was a litigator during that time, John Roberts as well. So those are two gentlemen that are obviously sitting on the Supreme Court. But my boss, being in Florida at the time, played a critical role in making sure that the votes that were cast in favor of Bush were properly recorded for him. And I think it came down to something like 539 votes, of which ultimately was demonstrated, was the tipping point to make Florida go to Bush and ultimately the election. In this instance, this 2020 election, the numbers are far more drastic and a much more coordinated effort on the parts of individuals who, I believe, do not want President Trump to be reelected into office. And so they swung these elections in these individual states towards Joe Biden. I was assigned to Pennsylvania, barred to practice in Pennsylvania, and I was assigned to one particular county. And, I can stop for a second and allow you to ask a question, but I was assigned to one particular county where I was able to witness things that were irregularities that, if they were aggrandized to a national level, certainly demonstrates that there was rampant fraud throughout this election.
Now, let me ask some questions here, because I'm convinced there's rampant fraud, and I think it's so many different areas of fraud that it's hard to even get our arms around how many ways the fraud has been committed. A lot of it's complex. Even something as a complex but yet as simple as this SolarWinds software that got literally hacked. They were supposed to be the guys that were to prevent hacks, but it was used to literally hack, and Dominion was using those systems. So, it seems to me that rather than doubling down and saying, hey, fraud was intentionally committed, it's enough to be able to say at this point, hey, you know what, they were hacked and they were, there was foreign interference in those elections and everything else. It almost seems like it would get half the people off the hook, and they might admit to it or at least acknowledge it to some degree. But what I find interesting in the country is the more we document vote fraud, the more they claim you don't have any evidence. I don't understand it, Jonathan.
No, you're absolutely right. And we're talking about in SolarWind, SolarWinds Orion, a company there, as you mentioned, is there to prevent hacks, but had such a loophole in their system that not only the U.S. Department of Commerce and the Department of Treasury have both been hacked through their I was going to say firewall, but hack through whatever system that they've put in place, but also now this election. And in Michigan, there was, in one particular county, almost a 70 to 80% error rate in the vote. 70 to 80% error rate in the vote, which is astonishing to have that much of a number of ballots considered hacked. Or how it's done in Michigan is that when there is an error rate with regard to even a single ballot, that ballot is placed in a different pile, and it's not counted individually. or it's not considered individually, you have one person that takes all of these amalgamated ballots and makes one single determination for them. So here you have a system that allows hackers to come in, sort of taint these ballots, and then you have another person, who knows who that individual is, able to make a determination on a whole swath of ballots. And that's,
now, let me stop you there. So there's several problems with that. Number one, the person that tainted the ballot in the first place, created this amalgamated ballots, that's really maybe a system. We say a person because the person engineered the system to do that. But then the other person knows nothing about that being done. They're just simply, hey, I'm getting a bunch of ballots. I'm doing my job effectively and appropriately. On the surface, that seems right. But even so, dealing with a bunch of ballots as one decision isn't honoring the integrity of each ballot on its face. So what I mean is there's parts of this where they know there's fraud, they know there's manipulation at least, and there's parts where they don't know. You mix it all together, though, and it's almost so huge, people can't believe it even exists, Jonathan.
Yeah, and that much corruption, and even if it's not intentional corruption, that much corruption is can be hiding in plain sight. One of the things that I experienced in Pennsylvania, so the same sort of thing happened.
Let's be clear. You were the attorney sent by Liberty Counsel on the ground in Pennsylvania, right?
Yeah. So the Trump administration actually reached out to me directly and said, you know, so that was my role. And I was assigned to one particular county. I won't name the county because I do think the county commissioner is a strong commissioner. And I do see your point that you're making earlier that even maybe not every individual was intentioned to be a part of this fraud, but it was out of their hands. I think the system was rigged against them. Nevertheless, this particular
commission, that's done primarily because there are still good people that wouldn't allow the fraud if they really understood it and if they really knew. They just kind of think, well, this is the way it's been forever. There can't be anything wrong with it. I'm not saying that's okay. I'm just saying there are good people who don't want fraud, but yet who are participating in the fraud unwittingly is the real point.
Right, and you're absolutely right there.
And without that, it couldn't happen is the point, and that's why I bring it up.
Exactly. So, yeah, unwilling participants is, I think, a great way to put it. Innocent individuals, you can't really lay a finger on them because there isn't a coordinated network. There's just enough there so that they have to participate in the corruption. So I was able to witness how this occurred in Pennsylvania. You have the idea of provisional ballots of individuals that come in outside a precinct or voting at the wrong booth or their address doesn't match up their name. Something is wrong. They're given this provisional ballot. Well, in this particular county, so there's about 5,800 in this particular county. If you extrapolate that across the state, you can already see the numbers adding up to a potentially election shifting amount of numbers. But in this particular county, they take these ballots and they put them in a pile. And it's on one day that maybe 9 to 12 electors sit around a table, get someone on a Zoom call, and we had to fight in order to get on the Zoom call, right? None of this is done in front of our eyes. It's all done virtually, of course, because of the COVID so-called crisis.
But hold on. Isn't that where we claim COVID's allowing them to make this fraud? By law, you're supposed to be able to see it in person, right?
And we fought. I fought consistently for me to be able to witness what was going on. And they would say things, well, you can't be within 12 feet per COVID. I'm like, well, I'm standing right next to you, telling the solicitor in this particular account, I'm standing right next to you, and you're now going to go back and be with these individuals. So if I'm spread something to you, you're going to go back and spread it to them. You know, just cut out the middleman and allow me to do my job. COVID cannot keep me away from doing my job. I'll be no closer to them than I am doing to you. And after fighting, I mean, days on end, they allowed us to get close enough. But that's just leading up to this process where they considered provisional ballots. When they actually considered the provisional ballots, it was just done online. I was sitting in my living room, not even on video. So I think I had a bathrobe on. It was that early in the morning. And they weren't in their offices. They were in their individual homes just considering 5,800 votes. And like I said, extrapolate that over the rest of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. This was a commissioner that I thought was actually being fair. I thought he was actually doing the right thing. But nevertheless, if you have that same sort of ability to do things outside of the public eye, do things your own way, there was no national standard, there was no state standard. It was what the commissioners themselves thought was going to be their standard in order to determine what votes were positive or negative, you can see how easy it would be for a nefarious actor to hack that system or rig the system or manipulate the results to go one way or another.
Well, and the commissioner's just saying, look, we got all these these ballots that we're not sure about. There's a process that's been in place for a while. I didn't put it in place. I'm just following it. That's their kind of view, right?
Right, right. I will say one thing. This process was done internally. It was done within the few weeks leading up to the election. It was out of his control how the internal process was doing, because it was this 9 to 12 person panel that sort of had to go through the work themselves. So they came up with their own process. He just sort of signed off on it. And he said publicly, I can't believe they changed the system during a national election. He said, we had a municipal election last year. We could have done it then. There was another municipal race next year. We could have waited till then. To do this in a national election was just waiting for us to fail. And he said that publicly. He said, I'll go on the record, said they were waiting for us to fail. And someone looks at that and says, well, all right, so here's one person saying that we're failing. But if you put that in context of what a failed election means, it means you cannot trust at particular counties' election results, can't trust the state's election results because it was that close. And as we're seeing all across the country, in Georgia and certainly in Michigan, as you mentioned, with the Solar Wind Dominion hackers, you can't trust it in Michigan. You can't trust an election across the country on such narrow margins where there was nefarious actors and admittedly individuals saying that this election has failed.
Hang tight, ladies and gentlemen. Jonathan Alexandra with us. Liberty Council Action on your radio. Hang tight. Stay there.
As the United States boldly stepped forward in the glorious light provided by its new constitution in 1787, the nations of the earth were in awe of the newfound strength and hope of this free land. Today, the nation stands at a crossroads. A divergence from the original intent put forth in the United States Constitution has brought grave threats to our beloved nation. A miracle is needed if the United States is to survive. That miracle is again the pure application of the United States Constitution. I'm Scott Bradley. In my To Preserve the Nation book and lecture series, I bring forth truths that will help raise up a new generation of statesmen like those noble Americans who founded this land. Vigorous application of these principles will invigorate and restore the nation, and we may become again the freest, most prosperous, most respected, and happiest nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com to begin that restoration.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family.
Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
All right, back with you live, ladies and gentlemen. This vote fraud thing is serious. I just don't understand a lot about it in terms of how can some literally document fraud to the point where it is undebatable, but yet others are saying, it doesn't even exist. Tucker Carlson said, there's just no fraud. You can't prove it. There's no proof. And literally walked away from the discussion. It is beyond imagination, in my opinion, ladies and gentlemen. Jonathan Alexandra with us, Liberty Council Action. He's an attorney. He was on the ground in Michigan, sent there by request of President Trump and others. Hack brings unwanted attention is the tip of the iceberg. But here's the question. Director of National Intelligence, they call him a DNI, right? Director of National Intelligence, John Ratcliffe, says there was foreign interference in our elections, Jonathan. Okay, so it's not just a Michigan guy saying it. It's all the way to guys like that at the top, and others are saying systems were hacked, and people like you who have investigated. And I mean, how much evidence do we need, sir?
Yeah, and just quick modification. So I was on the ground in Pennsylvania.
Oh, Pennsylvania. And, I'm sorry.
Yeah, sir. But what we were discussing at the time were like physical, either mail-in ballots, but physically written out ballots, things that at least are in paper. You know, I was able to see the envelopes, despite what I mentioned before, there was so much room for error and fraud in actual physical paper, not to mention what you're referring to in Michigan, where things are done online or via computer, where folks are showing up and just plugging or pushing numbers, and you expect that, you know, it's transferring through the wires and it's doing accurately and there's no middleman. We've obviously seen that this system was set up not only to cause errors and have these ballots, you know, sort of put in the pile where they'd be considered as a whole and not an individual vote, but at the same time, any records that should have been kept, anything that should allow for a clean audit, was wiped away. And, it, you know, it's not like this is an election that was done 60 years ago or 30 years ago or 10 years ago when the internet, you know, first started getting involved with elections. But this is an election that was done within the last few months. To have the records erased from of modifications done to a system for an election in the last few months, you have to pause and ask the question, well, why would someone do that? And who stands to benefit? And then you put that information and in your clear reasoning, extrapolate that to the rest of the country and say, well, obviously something was missed. Obviously something was a fraud. And that's what the court system is there to adjudicate. That's certainly what the lawyers have been presenting from day one. And I think that's what a good number of Americans are realizing happened in our election.
So what's going to happen? In my opinion, if we've got that kind of vote fraud and the courts won't take it, I mean, does the president use an executive order and have a military tribunal deal with this? I mean, if the courts won't, Congress won't touch it or whatever else. And when at some point you got to have accountability here, and I don't want a military kind of a tribunal because I'm concerned that the president gets too much power that way. It might be fine if it's Trump, some would say, but what happens when it's Joe? So what I mean is we need to be very, very careful here. At the same time, we need accountability, Jonathan.
No, I think you're right. One thing that we are encouraging people to do, so in the process of the Electoral College being counted, both the House plays a role, but the Senate plays a role. And the role that the Senate plays, any individual senator, Republican or Democrat, but certainly your Republican senator, can object. And all they have to do is raise an objection to the process, and it forces it to a debate. I think it's a simple majority vote, which we would have. It'd be, you know, 51 in our favor, with a tie-breaking vote potentially coming from Vice President Mike Pence, just to debate it, just to say, hold on a minute, let's look at the evidence that we have in front of them. And ultimately, they can decide not to certify or push this process forward. At the same time, individual state legislators, they can still withhold their Electoral College votes from Joe Biden. And we're not saying that they have to give it to Donald Trump. We're not making that argument. They can just withhold it and allow the state delegates to determine who the president is.
We're making the argument that there's evidence and due process needs to happen.
Right, absolutely.
Okay, go ahead.
And there's several paths forward for that to happen. There just needs to be the political will. And I think that's one thing that, you know, your radio show is critical at playing. That's one thing that we're hoping to do now, is letting individuals know that, hey, this is what's going on. This is what's been ignored. This is potentially, if you're living in Michigan or in Pennsylvania or in Georgia, this is what happened to your vote. It was just tossed out. Like, you could follow the paper trail and know that your vote did not count, or if it counted, it went the other way. Here's the sort of incentive that you need to build up the political will to get your representative to stand up on your behalf.
What about in states that no one's talking about, though? They all had mail-in ballot, too, and it may not be as, quote, fraudulent, may not be paper like Pennsylvania, may not be digital like Michigan or whatever else, maybe a hybrid of or one or the other or whatever. But I'm not convinced that the other states don't have the same kind of a problem, even without bad actors literally being on the ground, per se. Meaning it might not be as bad, but it still could be tainted at the source, as you bring up.
Yeah, and I think we will do well to pay attention to that. There can be independent audits, and it does not take that long for an independent body to audit their individual elections. I encourage and empower local state GOP offices to demand an audit of their electors, to say, hey, we've been, you know, taken out of this process, or we don't feel like this process goes well, or we're seeing this national narrative play out. We want to just make sure that you did it the right way. One thing that we're still encouraging is that individuals that observed things that went wrong to make an affidavit, get a sworn statement of what you saw, of what you witnessed, you know, get a notary public to stamp that name, that date and time, and hold that as an affidavit that you can submit to a legal team ultimately in the process of an audit, or if this court process, as it continues to play out, that you can join your voice in opposition to what was an election fraud.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. Jonathan, what about dead people voting and some of these other things? There's things there that are just beyond debate. Anybody in their honest right mind would have to say, well, I agree, that's a problem. They're not even admitting they're dealing with that, are they?
Yeah, we witnessed, we have a log, and it's on our website. We're happy to share it. A log of people that were 100 and 200 years old voting, right? You know, I'd probably err on the side of the opinion of a 200-year-old voter. I think they'd probably cast their vote the right way. But how many 200-year-olds you know are walking up to the polls, right? Just you know, and not to mention the dead people or the people that were married and left state. My wife was able, if she wanted to, vote four times in this election. So she got the mail-in ballot from her previous state. She was able, if she wanted to, because of her previous address, to still go to the polls and vote in that state. But also here in the new state that we lived in, she got a mail-in ballot and was also able to walk into the polls. So her as an individual, if she wanted to, could have voted four times. Now imagine she was nefarious, or imagine all the people that were poorly intentioned that wanted to do this, or people that didn't even know that they had a mail-in ballot sent to their previous address, to which could have been filled out, or the individuals that filled out their vote properly, but because there, you know, were bad ballots placed in that same bin or in that same pile, had their vote tossed out. So there's so many ways that errors could have occurred. They used the pretext of COVID to shake up the system, and look who stood to benefit. The, you know, a party that has been known to push bad narratives of you know, election interference, false narratives of election interference for the past 4 years, a party that didn't have the overwhelming support. I mean, even if you look at the rallies, you can see that no one was championing a Joe Biden presidency. But nevertheless, overnight, between the hours of midnight and 3 a.m., to have an entire election flip, and then to have all these not only mail-in ballots, but electronic voting have fraudulent occurrences with them. It's just too convenient. You could almost see it coming. And those who stood to benefit was this man, Joe Biden.
Well, and the dead Americans vote using those ballots and everything else. This could not be an accident. The other things we've been talking about to date could be, you know, a system that's faulty, maybe not intentionally, or, you know, others not really realizing the system they have is flawed, but well-intended people are not really understanding the system. But this points to direct intentional action, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So maiden names is a huge place for fraud to happen. Dead individuals and individuals that were registered because there's a social security number or name attached to them, right? They're in a log somewhere and someone decides to register them. I think we ought to, if this, you know, continues to go the trend that it's going, and, you know, there is a president-elect Joe Biden, I think we ought to sincerely pay attention to Georgia, where you have, you know, another runoff election for a Senate that could tip the balance of the Senate. You have a Stacey Abrams who's already said that she has, you know, about a million people registered to vote, and you're asking where, you know, where did these million people come from? So there's still votes coming up. There's still elections coming up that will tip the balance.
And how would she even know the numbers? Do you have a quick second to stay with me a little longer, Jonathan, or do you got to fly?
Absolutely. I can stick around.
All right. Stay there. I got a few more questions for you because there's just some things I don't understand. Okay. And I don't know how we go about the solutions is part of the problem. Jonathan with us, ladies and gentlemen. He was on the ground in Pennsylvania watching this whole contentious thing go down on assignment.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
You USA Radio News with Lance Pry.
Georgia's Secretary of State announced a statewide signature matching effort for the November election. President Trump's campaign claimed voter fraud and has requested that Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger execute the audit. Signatures for absentee ballots in all of Georgia's 159 counties will be reviewed. Biden has a less than 12,000 vote lead in Georgia. The Hunter Biden laptop is exposing the Biden family's close financial ties to communist China. The story, censored by social media and mainstream media before the election, is not going away. Joe Biden is attempting to change the narrative on CBS.
We have great confidence in our son. I am not concerned about any accusations been made against him. It's used to get to me. I think it's kind of foul play, but look, it is what it is.
The laptop also shows Hunter doing drugs and contain pornography. USA Radio News.
We've all heard it. Eat healthy. But what does eating healthy mean? Sure, there are countless diets out there, but they contradict each other. Yet all experts agree we should eat a diet rich in fruits and vegetables. Whole fruits and vegetables are the perfect fuel to power the cells in your body, giving you the stamina you need to handle your day-to-day activities. And that's what Balance of Nature is. Whole fruits and vegetables delivered to you in a convenient capsule form for only 22 cents a serving. Our proprietary blend has no additives or fillers, just the full nutritional value of a variety of 31 different fruits and vegetables. Balance of Nature provides you with a natural energy boost without a caffeine crash, a 3 o'clock slump, or an early bedtime. Experience the Balance of Nature difference for yourself by going to balanceofnature.com or by calling 1-800-246-8751 and use discount code USA.
SolarWinds is the software company providing the U.S. government with security on their computers. A major flaw allowed suspected Russian hackers to get in and exploit some of the highest levels of government. USA Radio News' Tim Berg digs deeper.
Two House committees are launching an investigation into the widespread cyber attacks on U.S. government systems. The attacks are thought to have been launched from Russia. A statement from House Homeland Security and Oversight Committees warned about potentially devastating consequences for U.S. national security. The Department of State, Homeland Security, and Treasury Secretary have all been targeted. Republican Senator from Florida, Rick Scott, saying,
if Russia is going to do these type of things against our system, and then we ought to be very aggressive to make sure that, one, they get no benefit out of it, and actually they're harmed out of it. You can't let sit here and just say, oh, please don't do it again.
That audio, courtesy of Fox News, from the USA Radio News Phoenix Bureau, I'm Tim Berg.
USA Radio News.
Jonathan Alexandra with us, ladies and gentlemen, attorney on the ground in Pennsylvania, or Jonathan Alexandra on the ground for Liberty Counsel Action, on assignment, if you will, from Liberty Counsel, but requested by President Trump and others, literally doubling down and documenting vote fraud. His role in Pennsylvania, by the way, is to prevent election fraud by witnessing and preserving information for the courts. That's Jonathan's role. Literally confirmed dead Americans' identities were used to vote, proving intention. A couple quick questions for you, Jonathan, then I know you got to fly. What's going to happen here? Are we going to really have accountability and truth and set this thing right, or are we just going to move ahead knowing that vote fraud is part of our reality?
Yeah, so there's the real answer, which, you know, it's probably a single percentage chance that something dramatic is going to happen in the next few weeks and overturn this election or vote or force a revote. And that's the unfortunate truth. You know, the Supreme Court, you know, certainly had the opportunity when Texas brought their suit and decided that Texas didn't have standing. There's still a path forward for an individual candidate. Donald Trump, as an individual, he would have standing. He could fight in the courts, and it would make its way back up to the Supreme Court, and they'd have to rule on the merits of the case. I honestly don't see the Supreme Court granting the relief that that we're all searching for, which is at a minimum a revote, or at a, you know, another solution would be not allowing the Secretary of the Senate to to call the election, and so you'd pass it down to the state delegates, of which there are, I think, 26 or 27 Republican state delegates, and so they would, you know, ostensibly cast their vote in favor of Trump. So there were a few paths forward. There still are a few paths forward. But if I'm going to be real and, you know, I have to wage in reality, I think there are probably a single-digit percentage of that actually happening.
Does Donald move forward with an executive order or something like that to deal with this? I'm concerned about that action. I understand why people want to do it, and I get that at some point you got a constitutional crisis on your hands. If we allow vote fraud to move forward and the courts won't deal with it, they play games with the word standing. I don't know who would have standing, per se, if you can never get there in time. The emergency nature of this is why we think that Texas and other states have standing to say, hey, the candidate doesn't have the ability to go through the process properly, and so we have to, you know, stand up and be half of kind of a thing, the voters here. But what happens? Do we do a military kind of a thing?
Well, what I will say, and I've said this from the outset of this fight, it's a lot easier to fight now in these next few weeks than to spend the next 4 years with an uphill battle. I mean, a Department of Justice led by Kamala Harris, you know, the Department of Education led by Joe Biden, all the 27 agencies of the federal government, they're led by these corrupt politicians, folks that have had full careers demonstrating that they're against life, they're against liberty, they're against the family. It's a much harder fighting them for the next 4 years than standing up and being counted in these next few weeks and doing all the efforts that we can now. So I hope that that option is on the table. I hope that the president is, you know, is willing. He's certainly able to move forward with an executive order. I would encourage it. I would encourage anything that brings light to the fraud that has happened this election and that hopefully leads to a revote. I'd encourage that to happen because it's worth fighting in these next few weeks because it will be a much tougher battle going up against the full arm of the federal government if it's in a Biden-Harris control.
Now, Biden promised until all the I's dotted and T's crossed. He promised during the debate that he wouldn't declare victory. He got caught lying. He's already done it. But the next deadline for us, really, or line, if you will, is January 6th. Congress is really the place where we would be able to, in my opinion, apply pressure and make the biggest difference at this point. Is that right?
Yeah, I think you're right. So there, you can still object to the process when you're in Congress. An individual senator, all he has to do is get up and say, we object to this process. It'd be, I think it's a simple majority vote, 51 votes casted. They'd have to retire and go and debate this and ultimately come back with, hey, we need more information to consider. And they have, there's enough speed bumps to this election for them to come back and say that we need more information there. The second thing that can be done is that the electors do not offer their, you know, they don't even have to offer it for Trump. They can just not give it to Biden, saying that we're not sure that Biden probably earned these votes, and then it'll go to individual state delegations, of which there's 27 or so, 26, 27 Republican state legislatures that would ostensibly cast their vote for a second term for President Trump.
The issue, ladies and gentlemen, here is transparency, due process of law, and honesty, and that's what we're calling for. We're not saying that we're against Joe. We're just simply saying we want an honest, transparent vote. And that's what we are pushing for. Jonathan, final word.
Yeah, well, appreciate it. What we're doing here is critically important. Your listeners play a very important role. You just mentioned what Joe Biden said. He said that he wouldn't declare victory. The reason he declared victory is so that he could have folks emotionally vested in his president-elect, right? The mistake, harping back to the work that we did 20 years ago, the mistake that the campaign manager said in Bush v. Gore was that they didn't declare victory and they didn't have enough public opinion thinking that Gore was president such that it was easy for them to swallow the fact that Bush was going to be president. What Joe Biden did in declaring victory was just that, just having folks emotionally vested to it. But we know that our opinion is on the right side, will ultimately be on the right side of history. And so the work that you're doing on this radio, hopefully the work that we're doing at Liberty Counsel and that Trump's lawyers are doing all across the country is to ensure that our opinion is heard, that our votes are properly counted, that legal votes are counted, and that illegal votes are tossed out. And I do believe when this fraud is shown for what it is, that Americans will understand that Donald Trump fairly won this election.
There's no doubt we need to take the case to the media and to the people because the courts aren't willing to listen. Last point, why can't we start arresting people along the way that we know have been involved in fraud? Don't we have the ability to pin the tail on the donkey in terms of certain people that have committed criminal acts?
That's a good point. Federal Election Commission, while they don't have an arm that can go out and arrest, you can certainly have the Department of Justice, who has prosecutors, throw some of these bad actors in jail. And there are a lot of places we can start. They're self-admitted. Like I said, the commissioner is saying that we should not have done this. This was a broken system. That's a place you can start. Even, you know, just a neutral actor, not to mention these more nefarious actors that certainly were part of, I think, a grand conspiracy, a grand thing to overturn the results of this election.
God bless you, sir. Our prayers are with you. Thanks, Jonathan.
Thanks for having me.
They're doing a phenomenal job, as always, Jonathan. Wow, folks, this guy was on the ground. He saw fraud firsthand. He's documenting it. His job for Liberty Counsel Action, lcaction.org, is to literally preserve information for the courts that's vote fraud so they don't destroy it, etc. Literally documenting dead people voting right on through. I mean, this isn't funny, but you got to laugh so you don't cry. Sheriff Mack, welcome.
That's for sure, Sam.
Anyway, great, great guest. Sorry to put you on hold for that. Now, you've got some stuff to report. Let's just start there, sir.
Well, I would say this about the election, since how he kind of got my election juices flowing. I've watched a video about it and looked at several different reports, and there's one report that's out there that's, it looked like, you know, it's like reading a 500-page book. But just let me say this about the election. Trump had made it very clear in two or three different worldwide speeches that he gave, and he gave one before the United Nations. One, I can't remember the name of the place, but it was some global meeting in Europe or the Middle East, or I can't remember where. But anyway, he was making it very clear to the world that he was against the globalist agenda, that he was against the socialistic movement in America and the communist movement, and that he was going to stand against it. And then he said even very clearly, any great leader would always put his country and his people first. And he was doubling down on his message to the world that he would take care of America first and that he would stand firmly against socialism and globalism. And then right after that, guess what happened? The pandemic, the so-called pandemic, started. And that's where you and I wanted to talk today, and that is because I have become a victim or a number of the so-called pandemic. I've been very sick for the last 10 days. I have tested positive for COVID-19, and I'll get you the rest on the other side.
And the problem, ladies and gentlemen, is a lot of people are getting sick. But the COVID-19 tyranny imposed by health experts, pro-lockdown officials, and the so-called mainstream media continues uninterrupted. That's the big problem. Let's talk about it.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better have a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt. And there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, But I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, a very sick Sheriff Richard Mack can't stay with us long. He doesn't have the energy, but he wants to double down and chime in here, so he got sick and tested positive for the COVID. Sheriff?
Yes, I've retired from teaching, and the last day I was supposed to be there was the 17th, and so I actually missed my last week of school and 2 days of the week before that. In fact, somebody substituted for me that you and I both know very well, Rick Dalton, subbed for me, even though he had some other plans. He very magnanimously helped me out there because I'm required to get my own subs, even though I was too sick to do so, I think. But I started getting a cough at school on Tuesday. I think that was the 8th. Yeah, the 8th. And We had planned a Christmas adventure with Lucy and her family, and we missed it. And in fact, Don was still going to try to go and leave me home alone sick, and because I really was just kind of coughing at the time. And then that night, I really got so sick, the sickest I've been in that I can remember in a long time, and I can't remember a time where I was that sick, but I'm sure maybe I have been. But I got a fever of 101 and chills and body aches. I could hardly move. It was difficult to breathe. And the thing that just kept going over and over in my mind was that I have a pre-existing condition. And you know that I've had 2 heart attacks. I'm still bewildered by the heart attacks because I was always so athletic and in shape and always working out and blah, blah, blah. I admit I don't eat as well as I should, you know. As you know, one of my vices is frozen custard. But anyway, be that as it may, I was getting kind of scared about how sick I was feeling. And I thought, oh, no, this is going to compound the problem because of my heart attack and my heart attack experiences, which the last one was January of 2015. But 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, I had another stent put in, and we avoided the heart attack. I was getting some warnings of tightness and shortness of breath, and they hurried and put another stent in. So I've had 3 stents and 2 heart attacks. So that just kept going over and over in my mind because I said, oh, this has got to be COVID. There's no question it's got to be COVID. And we tried to set an appointment to get tested, and then finally we got one, and it's at the football stadium in Glendale, Arizona, north of Phoenix. And we went there, and we got tested. Now, the way we got tested was the way I wanted to get tested. It was saliva only. And you have to spit in a little vial, and
which now means they've taken your DNA and put it on record too.
Correct. Yes. And so I did the test, and about a day and a half later, it came back a positive result that I did have COVID. And Dawn also, even though Dawn was not very symptomatic, it showed that she had it too. She had a couple of symptoms, and she was coughing a little bit, but she had no fever. And then one day she kind of had some body aches, and another day she had chills. Nothing even close to me. But the good news was, I doubled and tripled my dose of the Global Healing products that we have available on our website. And I really believe in Dr. Group and his immunity prevention products. And so I was taking zinc and vitamin C and iodine and several other things with his.
You got to add a massive dose of vitamin D along with that.
Oh, yes. And I did a lot. And I still have it here, and I totally believe in these. And then my fever broke after like 15 hours. And I thought, oh, good, I'm getting better. This is all doing really super well. And for about 2 days, I was getting much better. And then on Saturday, it really turned bad. And I did not get a fever again, but I got it's kind of embarrassing, but I got really bad diarrhea and vomiting. And I mean really bad. I could not hold water down. No matter what I was taking, all of the products, aforementioned products, vitamin C, all of it, I was throwing everything up. And it was draining me physically. I was dry heaving, and I don't know, it felt really, really drastic.
But you didn't go to the hospital?
No. And my nephew, Adam, is a ER nurse for COVID-19. He's also a nurse in an ICU unit for COVID-19. So he's very familiar with it, and I call him. And I talked to my own son, who's also a nurse, but he doesn't have the experience that Adam does around COVID-19. So Adam came over, and he gave me an IV. He says, you've got to have an IV. And so right here at home, he gave me an IV. So I got fluids back in me, and that seemed to do the trick. I was still taking a lot of vitamin C. And Dr. Group was calling me twice a day to check on me and to see how my doses were going. And he was amazing. And so was Adam. And so after that, I started improving. And it was kind of gradual. And so today marks, Saturday. So it's been 11 days since I got it. And I feel a lot better. I do not have my energy back yet. I'm still nauseated, although I am eating, which yesterday was basically the first day I was really eating. I had a few snacks here and there before that, and some fruit and some toast, and some fruit juice. But yesterday I had three meals. Very small meals, but I had three meals. And today I had a little bit of fruit and some juice, and I am keeping things down now, but I'm still very nauseated. And
very weak, and that's why we're not having the sheriff on for very long today, and that's why we haven't had him on for the last couple of weeks.
Well, another thing happened that I got to tell you that was really a surprise. And I had vertigo. I was so dizzy, Sam, I could not even stand up. I could not walk. And that was really scaring me. So I was telling all my medical people and Dr. Group and Adam and my son, this dizziness is really scary. And they were saying, oh, it was, you know, side effects have taken. Oh, and by the way, I did get a prescription for hydroxychloroquine. I've been taking that for, I was taking it for a couple of days, and then I got off of it because I thought it was causing the dizziness. So I quit for 2 days, and then I'm back on it, and it seems to really be helping. So with all the natural vitamins and vitamin C and D and all of that, I think that the worst is over.
All right. Now, Fauci's coming out right now and saying, hey, Sheriff, Fauci blames the American independent spirit is the reason for the rise in COVID cases.
Well,
and he's saying,
I wanted to address that. And
let me tell you what he's saying first. He's saying you shouldn't be with your family for Christmas, buddy.
Well, of course. Yeah. Well, we did for Thanksgiving, and we had a great time with Josh and his family in Texas. And none of us wore masks inside the house. We had a great time. I love my two little granddaughters, Ashton and Tatum. And we had a great time, and Josh made a great Thanksgiving dinner. And it was, I'm not changing anything else, and I would tell this to the world. I don't know how bad of a case for sure I had. There were a couple of times there I thought I was dying. But everybody I talked to said I didn't need to go to the hospital. And I said, man, if my breathing gets any worse, it might be too late to get there. I will say this, if I was on my deathbed, I would have written a note to the world that I do not want to give up my liberty for a little bit of help. I do not trust anything. I do not trust Fauci at all. I think he's a crook, and I do not trust any of this. I believe that the COVID was started and released to go after Donald J. Trump. And I believe that none of these people that are trying to shut us down care one iota about your health or mine.
By the way, CNN openly says this. Don't be alarmed if people start dying after taking the vaccine. It's the elderly, and they were going to die anyway. It's not really a big deal. It's not the vaccine's fault.
What a farce. Yeah, what an absolute.
Yeah, they're literally saying that stuff. And a California judge now rules that San Diego strip clubs can stay open. They say it's kind of a problem for Newsom. I'm not for really strip clubs, but I am saying at least people are starting to rule that we can open things up, which is a good news piece. CDC also now reveals that hospitals counted heart attacks as COVID-19 deaths, Sheriff.
Of course. Of course. So there's been so many lies about it, Sam, and I'm still of the mode, give me liberty or give me death. If I were to die of this or anything else or a heart attack, you know what? Most of that was my choice, and it was my lifestyle and also genetics. I don't know why I got the heart attacks I did, but I did. I don't know why I got COVID.
But here's the point. They say if you would get COVID and get really sick or die, or someone close to you would die, you'd change your tune. And now you've been super duper sick, and your response is?
I'm not changing my tune at all, Sam. I love this country, and I love freedom. And I hate the tyrants and the self-appointed Hitlers that want to destroy America. And the Newsoms and Whitmers and Inslees and Cuomos, those guys are so anti-American. They do not care about our health. They care about control and power and winning an Emmy. And these people are the real crooks in America. And if I die, you know what? That's okay with me.
We're about flat out of time, ladies and gentlemen. Some people say if somebody close to you died, you'd change your tune. Well, just so you know, in the last 4 days, I have a foster sister. And the COVID killed her. And I'm telling you right now, I'm quadrupling down for the sacred cause of liberty. The shutdowns have got to stop. The denial of liberty, if we trade our liberty for supposed security, we'll wind up with neither. And so those of you who say, you know what, if you get it really bad or if you have somebody close to you, you'll change your tune. You lie. And we're quadrupling down in favor of liberty over this tyranny. COVID's bad. I agree. It's nothing
it
to play with. But at the same time, the denial of liberty over it is unwarranted. And we better stand up now is the final point. Sheriff, get some rest. Godspeed, brother.
Thanks, Sam. See you soon.
Liberty Roundtable. lovingliberty.com, lovingliberty.net. God save the Republic of the United States.